You're listening to Federal Prison Authority Presents Around the Block with Bruce Cameron and Susan Giddings, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of, here, we're going to get this down, Federal Prison Authority Presents Around the Block. Here we are again. We took last week off to catch our breath, which was good because it's been an action-packed couple of weeks here in the Bureau of Prisons. A lot's happening. Remember, if you missed our last show, we talked about the administrative remedy process. And you can go to LA Talk Radio or Apple Podcast and find that. And you definitely want to listen to the administrative remedy process because you never know when you may need to know about that process. So, okay, so this week we got some items. So, Susan, go ahead and let you kick it off.
About a week and a half ago, there was some clickbait out there. About 10,000 clemency cases that the president was going to sign. And a few of our very in-the-know folks on our Facebook page actually went on to the pardon attorney site and said, well, there's not even 10,000 cases pending. So that was the first clue. It was published out of the India...
No, South Africa.
South Africa Times. Yeah, to South Africa Today or South Africa Times or something. Again, another indication. And if you did any kind of searching, you would have found absolutely nothing to corroborate it. But unfortunately, it is clickbait and got a lot of people excited about the process. And we had, I don't even know how many calls, because the articles claimed that I was an expert on clemency strategy, which is kind of funny.
Well, you accurately note that they cut and paste some of our information, biographical information from our book, and they put that out there along with two other prison consultants that'll remain nameless. But so it was really strange, and it was MSN, so it looked like it was a Microsoft network, MSN or whatever.
And it wasn't.
But it's something out of South Africa Daily. So, never been on the end of fake news, and then we were on the end of that fake news. So they just it's crazy.
And we were just getting bombarded with calls. And let's face it, I mean, it really instilled a lot of hope in folks. And that's something that, you know, you and I always, we try to dispel rumors as best we can.
But we're going to talk about how to apply and all that stuff.
We're going to talk about the actual process.
There we go.
So, clemency is a legitimate process. It is not a bureau process. So Bruce and I ordinarily do not deal with this. There is a policy. We will talk about that very briefly. But the process itself is really between the individual and the pardon attorney's office. We have posted on the Facebook group, but it's available. Just Google pardon attorney clemency application, and it's readily available. Also, for loved ones in the institution, they can see their case manager should have it. I know as a case manager, I kept copies in my drawer, blank application forms in my file cabinet, and but also available a lot of times in the law libraries, institution law libraries. They'll be pretty easy to locate. But a couple of things, there's very little in the way of criteria. Pretty much you have to be convicted in a U.S. court, so you can't be a military case or a state inmate. You have to be a U.S. code case. Convicted, sentenced. You could be sentenced to prison, probation. You could be on supervised release. Any phase of federal sentencing, and not have any appeals pending. A 2255. One of the questions asked on the Facebook group was, "What about the 821 amendments?" Don't know. Because again, Bruce and I don't handle clemencies. If that is in the appeal genre, then I would say you need to get that done. But the important part, and something that where we kind of connect to policy, is the fact that there is an expedited review process. So for individuals in custody, even if they get help on the outside to complete the form, you're working with an attorney or someone, you still want that form to come into the institution because the individual in custody needs to turn it into their case manager. The policy, and for those taking notes, and you want to look at the BOP.gov, that policy is 1330.15, change notice 1. But if you go into the Bureau website, pull up policy and resources, click on the policy link, and you can find them there in there numerically or alphabetically, depending on how you want to search it. But the important part is this expedites the process. Why? Because the case manager attaches to that application the judgment and commitment order, the pre-sentence investigation report, and if you have a current policy, if the a current progress report, they will attach that as well. There is not a requirement that they do a new one. There's not a requirement for them to do one if one doesn't exist. If you haven't had a point in your sentence where you're required to have a progress report done. So if you're in that arena, you don't have a progress report, then you want to, with your application, attach your certificates, your program completions that you have been doing. And anyone who's read our books knows we tell you, save everything. So when you're putting together a clemency application, you're not giving up your copies. You're going down to the law library and you're making copies. And you're putting that together. You're going to turn that over to the case manager. Had a lot of questions. What if the case manager doesn't accept it? Case manager doesn't have a choice. This is one of those policies. It doesn't say ordinarily. It doesn't say usually. It says the case manager, it says staff may not refuse to accept. The case manager accepts the application, annotates the date of the receiving the application on the activity record that's in the central file, so that there is proof that it was turned in. And then they have 30 days, 30 calendar days, not business days, calendar days, to put those other documents together, put a cover letter on it, send it up to the warden, have the warden's signature, and then send it to the pardon attorney's office. Had a question about, well, I don't know if my case manager did it. I turned it in. The cover letter and the activity record are disclosable. So again, asking for a copy to show that it went is the way to have that proof that it went out. So, but what else? Oh, just a couple of, I was kind of reading through the application myself. It's actually pretty straightforward, pretty easy to understand. But some of the things that kind of jumped out at me were answer every question. And if for some reason it doesn't apply to you, then you need to
Oops. Looks like we lost Susan. Anyway, so yeah, you can explain your circumstances. The thing about the pardon application, it's pretty thorough, right? I mean, you can actually tell them. I wouldn't necessarily talk about, hey, my case was a bunch of BS. Hey, I was railroaded. Hey, any of that other stuff. But good job. I was filling in, man. I was
filling in. I don't know what I did. I hit a button.
All the things that you can say. Go ahead.
Yes. So they talk about being forthright and honest. You can actually be prosecuted if you unknowingly lie on your clemency application. So don't do that. But inflating, retrying your case, like that's not what this is about. This is not the time to relitigate, you know, your conviction or your sentence. There's actually a section where it says, why should you get a clemency? I know a lot of people, if they have the financial means, think they should have an attorney do it. And maybe an attorney would be helpful in some aspects, but when you're answering that question about why you should receive clemency, I think, at least my opinion is, that personal story, what have you done in your prison time?
Right, your resume,
make
what
it
you've
better.
Done.
It's your, yeah, it's your resume. You know, you can't just say the judge was mean, the prosecutor was wrong, I was unfairly treated. Like,
I was railroaded.
I was railroaded.
Like, choice.
You know,
my business partner.
It was someone else's fault.
I'm the victim.
My defense attorney was terrible. You know, approaching it from that perspective, even if you totally 100% believe that, is likely not going to get you a lot of traction. On the other hand, talking about how you've spent your time in prison meaningfully, you've stayed out of trouble, you've participated in programmings, you've maintained those connections with family and community and minor children. And, you know, and it's okay to talk about the impact of your incarceration
right,
on your
what
family,
you, learned,
you know,
classes
and,
that you've taken,
right. All of
what
that's
you've gleaned from that.
Right. Couple other things in terms of individuals who are not U.S. citizens and have an immigration issue, they can still apply for clemency. Getting clemency doesn't touch anything to do with your immigration. If you're looking at deportation, you're still looking at deportation. What clemency does is shorten your sentence, either an amount of time or all the way to an immediate release. There is no appeal on clemency. You can reapply, but there is no appeal. It's the president's, ultimately, it's the president's decision.
Let me cut you off. We get a lot of questions like, well, I already put in, my loved one already put in for this 2 years ago.
And it's
still reapply?
Pending. Right. If you are pending, don't resubmit it.
Right.
Like, you're already in the system. Another exactly. thing with regard to those documents that you're collecting, staff cannot provide you a recommendation. Don't ask them.
Right.
If
the BOP
pardon
staff
attorney,
are not, they're supposed to be neutral parties in terms of helping you get your stuff in the mail or giving you access to the materials you need to fill it out to get in the mail or send over.
Well, you're going to turn it in. You're not even going to put it in the mail. You're going to turn that. Yeah, you're going to turn that into your case manager.
Right.
If the pardon attorney wants an updated progress report or wants a progress report, if there wasn't one to start with, they're going to make the request to the Bureau. If your health is part of the issue, you're requesting clemency. Things have changed. You're not dying. You're not a compassionate release candidate, but things have changed.
Right.
And they ask for medical information that will be provided as well. If the pardon attorney wants a recommendation from the Bureau of Prisons, they will ask for it. And ultimately, it comes from the director.
Right. And, you know, we talk about medical conditions and sometimes that comes into play. But please, for the love of God, it would be better if the medical condition was something. Don't overly reference something that was in the pre-sentence report, but if it's something new, like all of a sudden now you have cancer you didn't have before, or now you're stage 3, but you were not even stage 1 when you came in, or now you have some other chronic condition, then it's okay, because that is something that is new. The judge and the system didn't know about that at the time that you were, you know, prosecuted, if you will. And so that's new information that I think the pardon attorney and others would want
right.
to hear to further explain your situation.
And we explain that also when we're talking about compassionate release too. If the judge knew your situation at the time of sentencing, sometimes we see this with older offenders.
Or female offenders too.
But one of the things we see with older offenders is they want to request compassion release because of their age, except they were already in their 60s or 70s when they got prosecuted and got convicted. The judge knew how old they were. Now, if they were convicted, say, in their 40s, but they got a very lengthy sentence, and now they're in their 60s, that's a different situation, because now you're talking about, you went from someone in really the prime of their life in their 40s to now you're moving into senior citizen role. But so those are just some of the things that we looked at when we were kind of, you know, and kind of the guidance we were providing to folks when they were calling us. It's what we posted. But that's really the long and short of it. There's really not a whole lot of bureau side to it, other than you turn it in and they send it off within 30 days.
There you go. So that's good information.
Right. So now the other exciting news. So the Bureau released a press release on the 25th, 28th, something like that, week and a half ago-ish. And everyone got really excited because the title of it was Federal Bureau of Prison Issues Directives to Expand Home Confinement, Advance the First Step Act. Okay. Nothing changed in the laws. So if you read and you like pay attention to what's being said, all they said was we're going to maximize the use of direct home confinement within the existing laws as it applies. So take someone who's got a lot of FSA time. And this has been a point of confusion, right? You have a conditional FSA placement date. You had your year off. This is the rest of it. And maybe it's 18 months, maybe it's 2 years, maybe it's more than 2 years. We've seen people with more than 2 years. And instead of getting, even though they have a home to go to, unit team puts them in, they get a halfway house date. They get to the halfway house. Yes, they may be there a couple of days and get through the orientation and blah, 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 and then leave and go to home confinement. Or they may stay there for a couple of months or several months. And the Bureau is saying, as long as you have the resources, you got a roof over your head, maybe you already have a job lined up, maybe you don't, but you have residence that is verified, that's been approved, probation is good with it, they need to send you to home confinement, not clog up a bed space.
But look, it's interesting, right? I'm going to do a little metaphor, simile, not even something like that. Okay, but the First Step Act happened in 2018, right? For our trivia buffs. Right. And this is September where we 23rd. Are 7 years later. 7 years later. So it'd almost be like saying, we're going to start paying attention to the First Step Act and Second Chance Act and trying to appropriately utilize these policies. But there's no budget. They haven't given the Bureau a budget yet, right?
Well, on Second Chance Act, that's still a problem.
Okay. All right. But it's still a problem.
But for First Step Act, they just... Right.
There's no budget. We're on a continuing resolution, right? Yes?
Yes, we still are.
We are.
Yeah.
And I don't hear about anything about contracting. I don't hear anything about making new RRC contracts with expanded home confinement quotas and those things. Nothing. Crickets. Smallest cricket playing in the field right now. And so what I'm saying is, folks, I'm glad that they made a proclamation, right? But now they have to catch up to it, right? So
the other thing is part of the other issue is, yes, it did 2018, but it also took quite a bit of time for people to accumulate the volume of days that we're looking at now. And I would argue that's part of the structural flaws of the First Step Act is this kind of not unlimited, but extraordinary pre-release placement component
now, because the RRCs only get some sort of weekly update. They don't know. So we have, and this is the frustration. Inmate Smith, I'm not I'm just pulling that out of my nose. Inmate Smith tells RRC director / case manager, hey, man, I'm in 15-day earning status, and I'm really going to be, my home confinement eligibility date's really going to be up here, not back there. Halfway House says, hey, man, all I know is what the RRM tells me. I really wish I could help you, but I can't help you. I only do what they tell me to do. And this is 7 years into the situation. Well, now, you know what I mean?
And part of the issue is, as contractors, they're not getting that information. They are getting the current release date and the current home confinement eligibility date. So if you're sitting there in Halfway House right now and you have a actual release date of May of 2027, and let me tell you, there were people there. According to your case manager in the RRC, they're going to look at their system and they're going to say, oh, you can't go to home confinement until November of 2026. They don't have access to this conditional information. Some of the folks are coming to the Halfway House and they got the paperwork in their hand, right?
Those
copies before you leave.
But but it speaks to another issue that we're dealing with. We had a call. This is this morning's call, I think you're referencing just about, right? But number two, with the guy in Northeast.
Mm-hmm.
But number two, here we are. What's the date today, Susan? It's the...
What is today? Eighth?
Ninth. And yet, what hasn't... The credits haven't posted.
We haven't seen the credits
posted. As a matter of fact, y'all, I went on our Facebook and I said, hey, if anybody hears anything about their loved one's credit posting, please text me at 214 and the phone number, because I want to hear about it when it happens, because that's way overdue. There's a lot of people that are, whoa, I'll get off this soapbox. There are people sitting in federal custody that had this thing been.
This weekend or last
week. Press the button, they'd be free.
Right. We know of people right now who are literally sitting on the edge of their seat waiting for the update because their release date is this week when the update happens.
On the update that happens randomly. Well, and I love all the armchair people that seem to know more than us. It usually happens on the first Saturday. No, it's been pretty variable. You know what I mean?
Since the first of the year, it's been pretty variable. There was, you know, when I was still working, obviously I knew when it was happening exactly, but it was basically the last weekend or the first weekend of the month. It was that weekend that was closest to the end of the month. So sometimes it was the last weekend. Sometimes it was the first weekend. Sometimes it's split, you know, it might be a 30th and first, but it was pretty consistent. But since the first of the year, it has been quite variable, and that's created a lot of stress. Like I said, I really expected to see it this weekend.
You know,
if
some of these new staffing patterns, aka people that we know that are retiring, holy cow, that could be a very adverse, negative thing. Because I mean, the people that really know how to implement this at the highest levels are in, let's say, the deep single digits. Right. And so it's scary. Right.
Yeah.
So
it's kind of crazy.
Back to you.
So this came out and there is good stuff in it, because there is some training and some information and going out to make sure that as people are eligible for home confinement, they're moving to home confinement. And the reason for this is, this is also in this memo, is this commitment to making sure that the bed space for individuals who actually need a bed over a roof over their head and a bed to sleep in when they transition out of prison. Not everybody is going back to a spouse and two kids and a dog and a picket fence. In fact, a lot of people aren't, and they need those resources. And what's happened because of the way the First Step Act is written, we've had this kind of cluttering of the halfway house. The reality is you go to the halfway house, and once you've got a job and you've got a couple of paychecks under your belt, and you start looking for a place to live if you don't have one, or maybe you've got a relative that's willing to let you surf on their sofa for, you know, a couple of months, but that's not a permanent solution. So you get out there, you get a job, you get some paychecks, you build up some funds, and then you find a place of your own. And once you're stable, and you know, prior to the first step back, 90 to 120, 120 to 150 days of halfway house was pretty routine. That was seen as, depending on how much time you had, obviously someone with a longer sentence might get more time because they've been out of the community longer, they've been out of the job market longer, and individuals with really short sentences would get less time. Well, that all went out the window with the First Step Act, and that has been a problem. Here's where it gets interesting for those who aren't eligible for time credits toward halfway house, those who are being placed under the Second Chance Act. And we've been talking about this. The Second Chance Act is for needs-based placement. It is that transitional services to get you from prison to release. It's that halfway house, that halfway step. And if you don't need halfway house because you've got everything set up, yet we're still sending you there, we, the Bureau, they are still sending you there, you're taking up a bed. Now, it wasn't so bad before FSA because Second Chance Act, with its 10% limitation, 10% of your sentence or 180 days, whichever was less, it wasn't a big deal because you had your projected release date. You know, if you had a 60 days, a halfway house, and your unit team recommended you for a 60 to 90 day placement, you got to the halfway house maybe at 90 days, they did a home inspection, you got a job, turned in a couple paychecks, and boom, you were ready to go to home confinement.
Right.
Right. The problem is the home confinement date is still attached to the release date. It's, but they're doing referrals based on the conditional date. So now we're in a situation where folks are being recommended for a 90-day placement. They have 60 days of eligibility, but it's okay, based on a date that's not happened yet.
Right. But let's backtrack. I want to talk a little bit about some of the five-factor review stuff.
Sure, like, for instance,
anybody who has a sentence 60 months or greater is in a position to have, that's plus one, right? And if the sentence is 120 months, it's plus two. It's 180 months plus three. Okay.
What are you looking at?
I'm looking at some.
At a document that you received today? That is not an official document.
Oh, it isn't? Just
no,
testing
it
you.
It is not that.
Never mind.
Shred
but
that.
In theory, you stopped me there. I was going to say also, if you've been programming, that's a good thing.
Sure.
If you've had some family contact, that's a good thing. And so, if there's a need to establish employment,
right. So
that might be a good
thing.
There's
two issues that come into play. Overarching, I'm going to beat you later. It'll be challenging because I'm in Ohio. But anyway, there are two overarching issues with the Second Chance Act and with pre-release placement in general prior to the First Step Act. First was the needs. Do you need a home? Do you need a job? Do you have a permanent residence? Do you have a temporary residence? All of those things.
Right.
Have you been out of the workforce for the last 20 years? Right. Or have you been out of the workforce for the last 9 months? You know, what is going on? Were you a high school dropout and got your GED in the Bureau? Or are you coming in with higher education already in place? What are your needs as an individual? The other side to it is the security aspect. So that's the need aspect. The security aspect is talking about your offense, your criminal history, the how did you behave in prison? I used to do an admission orientation, and I used to, because I was at a penitentiary, and I used to say to folks, yes, the Second Chance Act has expanded halfway house for individuals at all levels. But if you can't stay out of trouble for more than 5 minutes here, how am I going to send you sign off on halfway house paperwork for you to go into the community where, in addition to the bureau rules, you have all the halfway house rules, and then you have all the laws and stuff for local community. So it's a combination of the second chance and the five-factor review is a combination of first needs and then security concerns, and they're balanced out. And then it leaves the institution, and the third factor comes into play, community resources. That's when the residential reentry office looks at the books. Do we have a bed available?
Availability.
Is there a bed? Is there a monitoring device? Because, you know, home confinement is still capacity. There's equipment. The staff have to monitor them. You know, I was sitting will never forget the day I was sitting in an OIG audit interview. Those are always fun. Talking about the CARES Act and the CARES Act placements and talking about the contractual capacity in the community. And they weren't getting it. And finally, this one young lady on the interview group said, well, you keep talking about capacity. They're going home. There's no capacity issue. And I had to explain that the Bureau just doesn't dump people out into the community for a year or 2 years or longer and say, you know, hey, report to probation in 2 years. CARES Act is gone. But under the First Step Act, when we're putting people out into the community for 18 months and 2 years and 2.5 years, they're still being supervised. So some of those capacity issues have to do with the staffing ratio. The halfway house may have a contract for X number of beds and X number of home confinement folks. But then if they lose a bunch of people and their staffing is down and they haven't repopulated, they've got staffing ratios that they have to deal with. Then there's the actual monitoring equipment or the actual bed. And then there is the always looming budget issue. If there's not money, there's not money. Right. So, but those are all the issues. And all of that was thrown completely askew by the First Step Act.
And we've talked about it's like booking a hotel, and it is like booking a hotel, particularly for the folks that are coming from the institution directly to home confinement, you know, because of it was able to work for them and fit for them. However, it's still that there was a slot and those things. Let's say the person's already in the RRC. Again, you're waiting for that home confinement slot to come open, as well as your eligibility date. So it's two things. It's not because, well, I'm eligible on this date, so I'm 100% going to get it. No, you're not, right? It's two things that have to happen. You have to be eligible for it, but there has to be that slot for you to go into it.
Well, and what we've seen is the persons, and we have several, who have everything in place. Home, job, they're doing well. They're doing everything they're supposed to be doing. Well,
like this guy this morning. He is just waiting for that eligibility.
And he's got months. So let's talk about the issue of the folks with shorter sentences. Now, we already talked about, you know, that they're subject to this 10% home confinement. This directive says we're going to reserve, we the Bureau are going to reserve that halfway house space for folks that need it. So if you're sitting in a camp with minimum security, or your loved one is sitting in a camp with minimum security, minimum risk level, they got everything in place, 18-month sentence. An 18-month sentence, the 10% date is, I'm trying to remember, I used to know this offhand. It's about what, 30... It's about 60. I'd have to do the math. It's not long. It's like 45 days or something.
Yeah.
We have folks that have 18 days of eligibility. The 12 months in a day sentence, 12 months in a day, that's 36 days of home confinement. So now you're earning you got your good conduct time, and of course, and you get your time credits, but you only have 36 days of eligibility.
That's it.
And that's it. And now, the agency is still attaching the 36 days to your actual release date. We use the analogy when we talk about home confinement and conditional date and actual release date of that old-fashioned doctor scale. We've talked about it here, that old-fashioned doctor scale with the weight, with the little bar that slides across. Home confinement eligibility time, those days, are that block. That doesn't change. But every month, the time credits are applied.
Pushes down the scale.
Pushes more, and it keeps moving. So what ends up happening is they're not, they don't get the full benefit of those 35 days or 36 days because it's based on their release date, which they don't actually get to until the release date because credit is being applied each month. And right now, the Bureau is still attaching that. Now, we've seen some exceptions here and there. I'm personally hoping to see, when I saw this memo come out, I read it to mean that they were perhaps looking at it. We've seen some additional memos floating around that specifically said that it was based on, you know, not based on the conditional date. That creates a challenge. But what we're going to see is, unlike in times past where someone was minimum security, short sentence, gets a 60 to 90 day recommendation, and they go to the halfway house. If they don't have a need to be at the halfway house, they're not going. The goal is not to refer them to halfway house unless they need it. The Bureau is trying to save up those halfway house beds for individuals who truly need it. And the reality is 65% of the Bureau population-ish, 65% isn't eligible for time credits, be it because wow. they're statutorily ineligible or they're medium or high risk.
So only 35% of the Bureau's population is eligible.
That's based on the June 2024 DOJ report.
I just want people to hear that because there's this tendency thing that everybody is and this and that. No.
And there's this belief that it's just nonviolent folks. It's just cases, you know, and if you kind of look at it's a mess. And you and I talk about that separately. So I expect to see minimum security, minimum risk individuals with short sentences getting less pre-release placement.
But I heard a rumor on the compound, ma'am, that people that are campers and have a home to go to, see that, well, that's more the home confinement thing. But
that's a good point. Now, like I said, you and I have been lobbying and talking about, and we are getting ready to have an article published. We're very excited.
Folks.
Very excited.
Oh, my God.
The big news. We'll save that. We'll talk about that in a minute. But one of the things we talk about is Congress really needs to revisit the how credits are being applied for someone sitting in a camp right now that has everything in place. They are eligible for very little home confinement. And with the current model, unless Congress does something, and with the Bureau saying we are prioritizing halfway house beds for those that need it, that means those that don't are not going.
You know, this is an interesting time because what about the new assistant director of the Federal Bureau of Prisons, who himself was a former inmate?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and turned his life around and all this stuff. I can't wait to see how he weighs in and what his vision is for this, which 100%. Is great because now, you know, it is interesting. It's a very interesting time, but now we have somebody in management who literally was a consumer of federal correctional services.
And he's got a phenomenal story. I'm going to segue.
Make no mistake about it.
He's got a phenomenal story of really turning his life around, going down a really bad path early on in his life with drugs and juvenile delinquency and all this other stuff. and wound up in prison at a very young age, in his early 20s, did 5 years in federal custody, and came out and made something of himself, really turned his life around, used his time in prison effectively, came out, and
he was never in an FCI. He was in a camp.
Yeah. He was a camper.
Never in an FCI.
Right.
Always in a camp.
So he came out, and he came out, and like I said, turns his life around, started a business, actively hired individuals leaving prison, you know, really walk the walk in terms of reentry. What we see in the space of folks who like to talk about reentry, they're fine with reentry as long as the halfway house isn't in their neighborhood, as long as they're not working in the restaurants that they're frequenting, as long as they're not, you know, thinking they're going to get a job in the businesses that they're running. And this man came out, started a business, Miles Stomping Ground, Tennessee, not quite where I live, but in Tennessee, started a business, built that business up, and was employing large numbers of formerly incarcerated individuals looking for a chance to start over, looking for that second chance. He literally, his story is what Second Chance, the Second Chance Act, the First Step Act, this is what it's about. He then turned around and sold his business, started a foundation, made charitable donations to a lot of organizations that help in this space. And today, like I said, well, prior to being employed by the Bureau, you know, he ran a foundation that was focused on not just the reentry side, but from in prison, the preparing to release, using that time in prison wisely to put yourself in a better position to come out and do something different. In fact, thought it was the name of his foundation, Fourth Purpose, comes from, you know, those of us who were in criminal justice from the beginning. You know, you go to college and you learn on the history and the four principles of, you know, incapacitation, deterrence, rehabilitation, and what am I forgetting? Punishment, right? It's punishment, deterrence, incapacitation, and rehabilitation. And he says the fourth purpose isn't rehabilitation, because rehabilitation implies restoring you to a previous state.
Or a better state. Yeah.
He says the fourth purpose is transformation, not restoring you to where you were before, because where you were before sucked.
Right.
You need to be in a better place. And that idea of transformation. And I just found that, I found it very positive and very exciting. So yeah, I think I know there's some memos, like things that are circulating, but I think now that they were also circulating without him there, and then yeah, he may have been involved, but I think as he becomes more knowledgeable on the Bureau, obviously he's been in the reentry sphere for a period of time, but as he becomes more knowledgeable and kind of starts digging into, you know, the policy wonkiness that I was doing, I think the results will be more positive. But I also want to see statutory change. I want to see I want to see more statutory change. I want to see more emphasis placed on not just getting out of prison early, which is still important, but that opportunity for the pre-release placement, but not an ungodly amount of time.
Just like some of y'all, some of the 924C people we have out there that are in federal prison camps that got nothing coming.
They have
in terms of
coming.
Eligibility.
You know, GNC. I would love to see, and you and I have talked about it, about
right,
revisiting right. the statutory ineligibility. If the First Step Act is about incentivizing program participation to put yourself in a better position so that when you release, you have a better shot and the tools to not come back,
right.
then why are we eliminating people based on something that happened at a fixed point in time in the past? And none of us have a way back machine to go in and change it. Not to say that we should eliminate, you know, I know that it's got to be bipartisan, so you're not going to see an elimination of it. But I think of that ineligibility list, but I think a substantial reassessment of that ineligibility. And I mean, that's from weapons charges to violent offenders to sex offenders. You know, there's an area nobody wants to talk about. Like, let's in prison. They too are releasing, and we want them in program. These are the people that we want in programming. We want them in treatment programs. We want them in substance abuse programs. We want them getting those tools and resources to better themselves. But like I said, 65% of the population is ineligible to get time credits. And some of those ones, and not all of them are like totally ineligible. Some of it's based on that risk level. But again, if you look at some of the clients, and we've seen some, their risk level is medium, is high. They were hell on wheels for the first 35, 40 years of their life. And now they're in federal prison. They're going to drug treatment. They're doing these programs, but they don't have enough time in prison to come down far enough to get to low secure, to get to low recidivism risk.
To cash and in these points.
And yes, there's an exception for the warden.
There is an exception.
But it's an exception. And you know what? One of the things that Congress, and again, this makes no sense, the criteria that the warden is supposed to look at, one of them is, isn't it significant risk to recidivate? If you are high risk...
We're down to 3 minutes, just saying.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, if you're high risk, you're high risk. So how does the warden come back and say, oh, no, you're not at high risk? It just doesn't make sense. But anyway, I will pontificate way too long about that.
Right.
All right. So we've got a whole bunch of exciting stuff going on. As Bruce said, or I said, we said, we have an article coming out very shortly.
We'll tell you when that article comes out. You'll get a chance to read it. We got permission to post it on our website.
We'll
tell you more about that, but also the ramifications behind that, the audience that's going to see that. It's going to be real special. So we're really looking forward to that.
Huge, huge deal. We just had our Unlocking Federal Time Credit second edition has been out for about a month, and it was the number one new release in legal education for the month. Yes, we were number one. The first book made the top. Let's see. I think it was the top 50 list or something of new releases. But this one came out and was number one new release for the month for its initial month. So I want to thank those that purchased the book. And hopefully you're finding it as helpful as we wanted it to be. And of course, we still have our Unlocking Federal Designation and Custody Classification. So,
For those of you that are coming into the system, you want that green book, man. I mean, you just want that green book to for your own knowledge, but also to assist your attorney as well. I think that'll be very, very instructive. For them to see how this pre-sentence report and other things actually play out in terms of your ability to maximize these time credits and get out as soon as you can. So definitely, if you're new to the process, you want that green book. So,
If you're a lawyer out there, we highly recommend you have it as well. You will be doing your clients a service.
Yeah, every attorney's body is like, thank you so much. And we're like, you're welcome.
Yep.
All right, everybody. Well, another exciting episode today on Federal Prison Authority Presents Around the Block. Feel free to look at all of our shows on the LA Talk Radio site. They're all archived by date. Also, we're on Apple Podcasts. Show summaries are on there, and you can find us that and several other aggregators of podcasts. So we're excited to be that. We're going to have a couple of guests coming up here in the near future. Uh-huh.
Working on a couple right now.
We've got a couple that we're, we just got to get them slotted, but there's so much been going on. We want to talk about the current news. So Thank you for listening and have a great week. And we'll see everybody here. Oh, also check out the Facebook page.
Yes.
And the YouTube channel. All right. And write comments and ask us questions. All right. Take care. We'll see everybody here next time. Another exciting episode of Federal Prison Authority Presents Around the Block. Take care. Bye.
Bye.
You're listening to Federal Prison Authority Presents Around the Block with Bruce Cameron and Susan Giddings, only on LA Talk Radio.